Captain's log, stardate 1533.6. Now maneuvering to come alongside cargo vessel Antares. Its captain and first officer are beaming over to us with an unusual passenger.
All right, Chief, begin materialization.
The transporter chief goes over to his console, and Captain Kirk looks over at the transportation chamber. The captain, the first officer, a boy of about 17, and a piece of baggage materialize on the pads.
Captain Raymar.
I'm Captain Kirk.
This is my navigator, Tom Nellis.
How do you do?
And this is our young castaway, Charlie. Charlie Evans, his dossier.
Yes. Mr. Evans. We've heard a great deal about you. Welcome aboard.
Kirk turns back to the officers, who seem uneasy. Charlie rolls his eyes back in his head.
Wonderful boy, Charlie. We felt
it's
quite
been a great
honored
pleasure having him aboard with us. Why, it's been a great pleasure. The things that he's learned in the last
absolutely. To think this boy spent practically his whole life alone on that planet. Everyone killed, just a few microtapes to learn from.
How many humans like me on this ship?
Oh, like a whole city in space, Charlie. Over 400 in the crew of a starship, aren't there, Captain?
428, to be exact. Is there anything we can do for you, Captain? Medical supplies, provisions?
Hundreds. Human like me. That's exciting. Is that the right word?
That's perfect. It's the exact word.
You see, we'd like to keep Charlie with us. But with his closest living relatives in Colony 5 and your vessel going that way, what?
I'd like to see your ship now. All of it. The people and everything.
You keep interrupting, Mr. Evans. That's considered wrong.
I'm sorry.
We have a large supply of entertainment tapes, gentlemen.
No, we've a tight schedule to make, Captain. Just 20 of us. We're making out fine.
Well, this must be a space first. A transport ship that doesn't need anything?
Nothing.
Not even sorry and brandy?
We're fine, thank you. Pleasant journey, Captain.
Thank you.
Janice comes in as the officers beam away. Charlie stares at her.
Gentlemen, Rand, this is Charles Evans. Show him to his quarters and drop his records off at Dr. McCoy's office, if you will.
Yes, sir. Come with me, please.
She steps out of the door, then turns and looks back at Charlie. He looks between her and Captain Kirk uncertainly.
Are you a girl?
Janice throws the captain a puzzled look. Charlie turns to Kirk.
Is that a girl?
That's a girl.
With an arch lift of her eyebrows, Janice takes Charlie by the shoulder and leads him away.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. Charlie X. In the dispensary, Dr. McCoy runs tests on Charlie.
Captain's log, stardate 1533.7. We have taken aboard an unusual passenger for transport to Colony Alpha 5. Charles Evans, the sole survivor of a transport crash 14 years ago. The child, alone from age 3, has not only survived, but has grown to intelligent, healthy adolescence.
Tommy, ship's supply of food concentrates couldn't have lasted 14 years.
Well, after that, I found other things to eat, just growing around.
And you learned to talk by just listening to the ship's tapes?
The memory bank still worked. They talked to me and I talked back.
You're 4-0.
4?
4-0, 100%. Sound of wind and limb.
Charlie looks at McCoy uncertainly. He gets off the dispensary bed and puts on the loose jacket he wore when he arrived.
That captain, Kirk?
Yeah.
Why does he call me Mr. Evans?
Because that's your name.
He's not... Well, he isn't like Captain Remart.
Oh, no. Captain Kirk is one of a kind, Charlie.
The gangly youth looks at McCoy earnestly.
Do you like me?
McCoy shrugs.
Why not?
The other ship. They didn't like me. I tried. I'm trying to make people like me. I want them to like me.
Most 17-year-olds do.
Charlie grins.
Come on, let's go. Show you to your quarters.
Charlie wanders around the ship, looking curiously into everything. He watches a maintenance crewman feeding a long tube into a duct in the floor. Charlie returns the crewman's friendly smile but doesn't speak. Instead, he kneels by the ducting and peers into it with a broad grin. Later, he stands at the bottom of a sloping access tunnel as two technicians in overalls climb out. They don't notice him at first.
Hey, I'll put the equipment away. See you in the rec room, huh?
You got a deal, friend.
All right. Hello.
Charlie grins at the man and walks away. Yeoman Janice Rand steps out of her room. Charlie gazes as she passes him. He sniffs the air like an animal and hurries after her.
I brought you a present.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it, but I have to go. I'm on duty.
Do you like that guy?
Yes, I...
She looks at the perfume bottle and looks up, amazed.
It's my favorite. Where did you get it? They don't have any in the ship's stores.
It's a present.
I know, but where did... Gee, I'm late, Charlie. I really have to go.
Can't you stay and talk to him?
Look, I'm off duty at 1400. Why don't you join me in Recreation Room 6, Deck 3?
You got a deal, friend.
He slaps her backside.
Charlie!
He comes back.
I thought... Don't be angry, I did... I wanted...
Charlie, you... You just don't go around slapping girls on the...
His boyish face falls.
It's okay, but just don't do it again.
I'm angry.
Look... Why don't you tell Captain Kirk or Dr. McCoy what you did, and they'll explain it to you, okay?
I will.
Okay.
Charlie gazes after her as she walks away. McCoy talks to Spock on the bridge.
But tell me, what reason would he have to lie if there are Thasians?
That is a very intriguing question.
Scanners show no disturbances in this quadrant, Captain.
Good. Dr. McCoy, Mr. Spock is working out...
Status report.
Thank you. He's working out a training program for Charlie Evans, Earth history, his own background, that sort of thing. I'd like you to give him the necessary medical orientation on the problems of, adolescence.
Well, don't you think it'd be better for a strong father image like you? He already looks up to you.
The job is yours, Bo, and flattery will get you nowhere.
Doctor, didn't the boy make any reference at all to Thasians?
Do you believe the legend, Mr. Spock, that Thasians still exist on that planet in some form?
Charlie's very existence proves, in fact, there must be some intelligent form of life on Thasus. He could not possibly have survived alone. The ship's food concentrates would have been exhausted in a year or so.
By which time he would have been eating fruits, vegetables,
probes
nuts.
Probes of Thasus indicate very little
animal life. And probes have been known to be wrong,
Doctor,
Mr. Spock.
Are you speaking scientifically or emotionally?
Gentlemen, the fact is the boy is here and he's alive and he needs our help.
And he needs a guide, and he needs a father image, Jim.
I'll depend on your astute abilities to supply him with that. I'll find him one.
Later, some of the crew are relaxing in Recreation Room 6. Janice is playing Patience. Spock is trying to play on his Vulcan lute, but Lieutenant Uhura keeps joining in. Spock looks over at her and pointedly stops playing.
I'm sorry. I did it again, didn't I?
He smiles and resumes his playing. Janice catches Uhura's eye and urges her on. Uhura winks and gets up. While she's singing, Charlie comes in, smiling anxiously.
Oh, on the Starship Enterprise, there's someone who's in Satan's from you. At first his book could hypnotize, and then his touch would cauterize. His alien love could victimize and rip your heart from you. And that's why female astronauts, oh very female astronauts, we terrified and overwrought to find that he loved you. Oh, girls in space, be wary, be wary, be wary. Girls in space, be wary. We know not what he'll do.
Charlie stands beside Janice's chair, gazing down at her as she applauds.
One more time.
Uhura looks at Charlie. Charlie gives a tight smile.
Oh, Charlie's our new darling.
Charlie sits beside Janice.
Charlie's our new darling. We know not what you'll do.
Charlie glares at Uhura out of the corner of his eye. She immediately puts her hand to her throat and stops singing. He turns to Janice.
Want to see something?
She shakes her head, puzzled. Charlie takes three playing cards, shows them to her, then lays them face down on the table in front of her.
Turn them on.
Smiling, Janice turns over the playing cards. Her jaw drops. All three cards now show color photographs of her in her Starfleet uniform.
Well, how did you do that?
Well, I can do a lot of card tricks. One of the men on the Antares showed me.
Other members of the crew gather round. He takes the same three cards and turns them over again. They are now the King, Queen, and Jack of clubs.
I don't believe it.
Charlie peels four aces off the top of the pack, lays them on the table, chooses the ace of clubs, and nonchalantly throws it away. He gathers up the remaining aces, rests his chin on his hand, and stares at Janice. She blinks in surprise and, with a look of mild reproof, puts her hand down the front of her uniform and produces the ace of clubs from her top. Charlie grins happily. Later, he comes up to Captain Kirk, who's talking to one of the ship's cooks.
On Earth Day, it's Thanksgiving. If the crew has to eat synthetic meatloaf, I want it to look like turkey. Charlie?
Captain?
Yes.
I'm supposed to ask you something. Why shouldn't I? Explain it.
Well, say it right out, Charlie. That usually works.
Well, in the corridor, I saw when Janice, when Yeoman Rand was... Well, I did that to her, and she didn't like it. She said you'd explain it to me.
Me? I see. Well, there are things you can do with a lady, Charlie, that you...
Kirk scratches his face.
Well, there's no right way... To hit a woman. I mean, man to man is one thing. But man and woman, it's another thing. Do you understand?
I don't know.
Captain Kirk.
Excuse me. Kirk here.
Captain Ramart of the Antares is on D channel.
I'm on my way to the bridge now.
Can I come with you?
I don't think so, Charlie.
I won't get in the way.
Charlie hurries into the lift. On the bridge, Spock stands behind Uhura.
Can you boost your power, Antares? We're barely reading your transmission.
We are at full output, Enterprise. I must speak to Captain Kirk.
Kirk here, Captain Robert.
We're just barely in range. I've got to warn.
Re-establish contact.
They're not transmitting.
I'm trying.
It wasn't very well constructed.
Kirk and Spock turn and look at Charlie.
Sweep the area of the Antares transmission with our probe scanners, Mr. Spock.
Affirmative, Captain.
Kirk turns back to Charlie, his eyes narrowed.
You think something happened to the Antares, Charlie?
I don't know.
Picking up some debris on our scanners, Captain.
What about the Antares?
Spock checks his readings.
The debris is what's left of the Antares.
Shocked, Uhura looks up at Kirk, who turns to Charlie. The boy lowers his eyes uneasily under the captain's gaze.
Captain Kirk from ship's galley.
Kirk here.
Sir, I put meatloaf in the ovens. There's turkeys in there now. Real turkeys.
Chief, have you...
Charlie stifles a giggle and hurries from the bridge. Kirk watches him go.
Captain's log, stardate 1535.8. USPA headquarters notified of the mysterious loss of science probe vessel Antares.
In one of the rec rooms, Kirk and Spock are playing three-dimensional chess.
Your mind is not on the game, Captain. Check. The Antares.
A survey ship with 20 men aboard lost. No reason. Obviously, Captain Raymart was not aware of any trouble. I can't figure it.
My own concern is more immediate. The boy.
I can usually follow you, Mr. Spock, but this time...
He seemed to know what happened to the Antares before we did.
Charlie comes in.
I'd call that a pretty long reach for evidence, Mr. Spock. Come in, Charlie.
Kirk moves his piece on the multi-level chessboard.
And again. Check.
Kirk takes another move.
Check me.
He smiles. Spock raises his sloping black eyebrows.
Your illogical approach to chess does have its advantages on occasion, Captain.
I prefer to call it inspired.
As you wish. At any rate, the game is yours.
You play chess, Charlie?
Oh, I watched them play on the Antares. Can I try?
I place you in the hands of our chess master.
Kirk gets up and leaves. Charlie watches him go.
The principles of three-dimensional chess are basically mathematic, Charlie. You put the white here and the black on the secondary level.
I know what it is. Let's play.
He sits down, gazing at the board.
Very well.
Charlie, playing white, moves a piece from the middle to the bottom level. Spock counters by taking a black piece from the top level and moving it to one of the smaller, movable levels. Charlie studies the board and moves a white piece to the upper level.
That was a mistake, Charlie.
No, it wasn't.
Spock moves a piece to the upper level.
Checkmate.
No, it isn't.
Spock raises his eyebrows in surprise at Charlie's vehemence.
If you'll excuse me.
He gets up and leaves. Charlie clenches his jaw resentfully. Charlie looks back at the chessboard, grips the sides of the table, and rolls his eyes back in his head until only the whites are showing. He goes. All the white pieces on the board have melted. He strides down the corridor, almost bumping into Janice and a younger woman.
Oh, Charlie, I was looking for you. I'd like you to meet Tina Lawton, Yeoman Third Class. Charlie Evans.
Hello, Charlie.
He glances at her.
I thought you might enjoy meeting someone your own age.
Can I talk to you? Alone.
Charlie, Tina's...
Excuse me. I must be wanted somewhere.
She leaves in a huff.
That was rude and completely uncalled for.
But I don't need her. I want to talk to you.
But that's no excuse. You better learn that right now. You have to live with people, Charlie. You're not alone anymore.
But she's not as... She doesn't... She's not the same. Not like you. She's just a girl. You're... You smell like a girl. All the other girls on the ship, they look just like Tina. You're the only one who looks like you. You can understand, can't you? You know about being with somebody, wanting to be I had the whole universe, I'd give it to you. I see you, I feel like I'm hungry. All over. Hungry. Do you know how that feels?
Janice gazes into Charlie's intense blue eyes, then looks away, troubled. Later, she talks to the captain on the bridge.
What?
I wasn't sure I should talk to you about this.
Yeah, well, Charlie's a 17-year-old boy.
Exactly. And he's...
I've already talked to him about the SWAT.
It's not that. Captain, I've seen the look before. And if something isn't done, sooner or later I'm going to have to hurt him. Tell him to leave me alone.
Hmm.
And that wouldn't be good for him right now. You see, I'm his first crush, his first love, and his first...
Yes, Yeoman, I'll talk to him. I'll look into it.
Thank you, sir.
She goes. Kirk smiles to himself. Later, Charlie comes to Kirk's quarters.
Come in, Charlie.
Grinning, Charlie goes right up to him. Kirk smiles awkwardly.
Charlie...
Kirk walks away. Charlie follows him doggedly.
Charlie, do you know anything about this chess piece? Did you notice something peculiar in them when we were using this afternoon?
No, sir. Is that all?
No. Now sit down.
Kirk remains standing, facing Charlie across his desk.
Charlie, being 17 is more than how many years you've lived. It's a whole other thing. Dr. McCoy could probably... explain the biological conditions.
He looks at the teenager sidelong.
Well, let's use a specific. Yeoman Rand is a woman.
Oh, I won't hit her like that anymore.
No, there's more to it than that.
Charlie lowers his head.
Everything I do or say is wrong. I'm in the way. I don't know the rules. And when I learn something and try to do it, suddenly I'm wrong.
Now, wait.
I don't know what I am or... what I'm supposed to be, or even who. I don't know why I hurt so much inside all the time.
You'll live, believe me. There's nothing wrong with you that hasn't gone wrong with every other human male since the model first came out.
What if you care for someone? What do you do?
He looks up at Kirk with a fervent intensity.
You go slow.
Kirk spreads his hands.
You be gentle. I mean, it's not a one-way street, you know. How you feel, and that's all. It's how the girl feels, too.
Charlie's eyes become wary.
Don't press, Charlie. If the girl feels anything for you at all, you'll know it. Do you understand?
You don't think, Jan, you... she could love me.
She's not the girl, Charlie. The years are wrong, for one thing. And there are other things.
She can.
No, Charlie.
She is.
No.
But if I did what you said, if I was gentle...
Charlie, there are a million things in this universe you can have, and there are a million things you can't have. It's no fun facing that, but that's the way things are.
Charlie stares abjectly.
Well, then what am I going to do?
Hang on tight and survive. Everybody does.
You don't.
Everybody, Charlie, me too.
I'm trying. But I don't know how.
Kirk switches on his view screen.
Kirk here.
You asked to be notified when we were to make our course adjustments, sir.
He glances at Charlie.
Ask Mr. Spock to see to it. Charlie, come on with me.
In the gymnasium, crew members are sparring, exercising, and performing gymnastics. Kirk, bare-chested, wearing red martial arts tights, shows Charlie how to fall on a mat. He springs up.
You gotta slap the floor to absorb the energy when you fall. Go ahead, try it.
Charlie, in red tights and a loose-fitting judo jacket, falls on his backside.
Like everything else, it takes practice, Charlie. Try again.
He does, breaking his fall with his hands.
Good, that's much better. Hey, now I'll show you a shoulder roll.
Kirk rolls and springs to his feet.
Try that.
I don't want to do that.
Well, it makes it hard to teach you.
I don't want to do that.
All right, Charlie, lesson's over for today.
You were going to teach me how to fight.
You have to learn to protect yourself in the fall before I do that. And it's more than just teaching you how to defend yourself.
Charlie walks away.
Charlie, I want you to Charlie.
Kirk turns to a crewman.
Hey, Sam, let me borrow you for a couple easy throws, huh?
Right.
Watch it, Charlie.
Sam, also dressed in a loose jacket, locks arms with Kirk and throws him.
Wasn't so bad, was it? I'll throw him. Here we go, Sam.
He grasps the lapels of Sam's jacket and rolls onto the mat, planting his foot in Sam's stomach and throwing him.
That looks hard.
Come on, Charlie, try it.
Sam goes to sit in a corner.
That's good.
Kirk and Charlie grasp each other by the shoulders. Charlie tries repeatedly to trip Kirk and pull him into a fall. Kirk avoids Charlie's feet with an amused half-smile, waits for his moment, and throws the younger man to the ground.
Oh.
Sam laughs.
Wasn't so bad, was it?
Don't laugh at me.
Cool off.
Don't laugh at me!
Charlie glares at Sam and rolls his eyes back in his head. Sam vanishes. Kirk looks at Charlie and gets to his feet, amazed and appalled. Where Sam was sitting, nothing remains but his towel. Charlie gets up with a guilty glance at Kirk and turns away. Kirk follows.
Charlie. You shouldn't have done that. It's not nice. I laugh at people.
What happened to him, Charlie?
It's gone.
Kirk steps in front of Charlie.
That's no answer.
He's gone. I didn't mean to do that. He made me do it. He laughed at me.
He stares sullenly at the floor. Kirk goes to an intercom.
Bridge.
Kirk here. Two men from security on the double.
Affirmative.
What are you going to do to me?
I'm confining you to quarters. I want you to stay there.
I won't let them hurt me. I'll make them go away, too.
They won't hurt you, Charlie.
Two men in red uniforms come in.
They'll take you to your quarters, Charlie. Go with them.
As they step towards him, Charlie glares at them and they fall. One reaches for his phaser.
Oh!
Charlie rolls his eyes back in his head, and the phaser disappears from the man's hand. Kirk steps towards Charlie, throws him a warning look with his intense blue eyes. But the captain stares him down.
Go to your quarters.
He was going to hurt me.
Go to your quarters or I'll pick you up and carry you there.
They lock eyes dangerously. In the gymnasium, Charlie stares at Kirk with his piercing blue eyes and tilts his head in unmistakable warning. Kirk holds the boy's gaze until he hesitates and looks down at the floor.
I won't let you.
That's your choice, Charlie.
Charlie looks back at Kirk, who holds his eye unrelentingly. Again, Charlie backs down. He steps towards the security officers.
I won't let them hurt me.
They won't hurt you.
Charlie walks out with the security detail.
Captain Kirk.
Kirk goes to the intercom.
Kirk here.
Security reports that all phaser weapons have disappeared. Shall I repeat, Captain?
No, I heard you. Have Dr. McCoy and Mr. Spock meet me in the briefing room.
Spock sits calmly at the briefing room table while Kirk paces up and down.
Phasians have been referred to in our records as having the power to transmute objects or render substances invisible. It has generally been regarded as legend, but Charlie does seem to possess this same power.
What chances are that Charlie isn't an Earth being, that he's a Phasian?
No, I don't think so. Not unless they are exactly like Earthlings. The development of his fingers and toes exactly matches the present development of man's on Earth.
Agreed.
Well, whatever he is, we have some idea of the power he has. I know what I saw him do in the gymnasium.
Considering the effect a normal adolescent has on a home, Charlie, with the power he has...
Short-tempered, because he doesn't understand. He needs, he wants. Nothing happens fast enough.
The probability is he's responsible for the destruction of the Antares, which would indicate a total disregard for human life.
He doesn't understand what life is. He's a boy.
Well, what do we do with this boy, Jim? How do we keep him caged up?
It goes even further than that, Doctor.
We can't take him with us to Earth Colony 5. Can you imagine what he'd do in an open, normal environment? I've talked with him. I've listened to him. He's a boy in a man's body trying to be an adult, with the adolescent in him getting in the way.
And with a weapon in him, which could destroy you or anyone, anywhere on this ship.
Kirk glances at McCoy, perched on the table.
Well, for the moment he's stopped. You're an authority he respects, Jim.
Agreed. The struggle must remain between you and him. Should any of us interfere...
Charlie comes in, attended by a guard. His smile vanishes as he regards the solemn faces in front of him.
You wanted to ask me something, he said.
You responsible for what happened to the Antares, Charlie?
Why?
Answer me.
He avoids Kirk's eye.
Yes? There was a warped baffle plate on the shield of their energy pile. I made it go away. It would have blown up anyway. Well, they weren't nice to me. They wanted to get rid of me. They don't now.
What about us, Charlie?
Slowly, Charlie raises his eyes to meet Kirk's steady gaze. Charlie lowers his head and walks out. The security guard follows. Gravely, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy watch him go.
You're in the hands of an adolescent.
Kirk and Spock arrive on the bridge.
Lieutenant, raise Colony 5. I want to speak directly to the governor.
Yes, sir.
Navigator, laying a course away from Colony 5. Buy me some time.
Yes, sir.
Uhura's communication panel short circuits, throwing her to the floor. Kirk runs over to help her up.
Spock, get the doctor up here in the double. How bad is it?
I think it's all right, sir.
Yeah.
So there's no reason for that panel to cross circuit like that? I checked it over myself not 15 minutes ago.
Captain! I can't feed any course coordinates into the panel, sir. It rejects the course change. Helm doesn't respond either, sir.
Charlie arrives in the lift.
Mr. Spock, you getting any readings on your instruments?
Yes, sir. There's a tiger burning bright in the forest of the night.
Spock,
I'm trying to Saturn rings around my head down a road that's Martian red.
You're trying to change course, Captain. You can't do that. I want to get to Colony 5 as soon as we can.
Kirk takes a step towards Charlie.
Release the transmitter.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
What's going on here? Spock calls me to the bridge and then goes into some kind of porch.
See to her, Doctor.
Once upon a midnight dreary while I pondered weak and weary.
Very nice, Mr. Ears. Oh, I can make him do anything. Whirl around, laugh, anything.
That's enough, Charlie.
Oh, don't you think he's funny? I think he's funny.
Leave my crew alone.
Kirk's eyes narrow. Charlie tries to face him down, wavers, looks at him sulkily, and turns back towards the lift. The red doors slide open. Spock comes across to Kirk.
Jim, he'll soon reach a point where he won't back down.
I know.
In the corridor, Charlie passes the young yeoman Janist introduced him to.
Charlie, what's wrong?
He rolls his eyes. Yeoman Lawton changes into an iguana. Charlie smiles to himself. Janice, in a pink off-the-shoulder dress, is in her quarters. Charlie comes in.
I have something for you.
He stands with one hand behind his back. Janice gets up. With a flourish, he produces a single pink rose. She looks at him stony-faced.
Pink is your favorite, isn't it?
Her expression doesn't alter.
You don't walk into a room without knocking.
Don't ever lock your door on me again, Janice. I love you.
I'll lock it when I please. What is it you want, anyway?
He gazes at her pathetically.
You.
He steps towards her. Behind her back, Janice reaches for the switch on her view screen.
I only want to be nice to you. I can give you anything. Just tell me.
I want you to get out.
I only want to be nice to you.
Get out, Charlie.
Spock.
I can't make it any plainer than that.
They run to the turbo lift.
love you.
You don't know what the word means.
Then show me.
No!
Kirk and Spock run in. Charlie glares at them and they collapse. Janice slaps him.
Charlie!
He shows the whites of his eyes and Janice vanishes.
Why did she do that?
He turns to Kirk and Spock, grief-stricken.
I loved her. But she wasn't nice at all.
He glares at them.
What you did wasn't nice either. But I still need you, Captain. The Enterprise isn't quite like the Antares. Running the Antares was easy. You have to be nice. All right.
He rolls back his eyes. Kirk doubles up in pain. Charlie waits, then releases him. Fighting for breath, Kirk gets to his feet. Spock sits crumpled on the floor.
Mr. Spock?
My legs. They're broken.
Let him go too, Charlie.
Why?
Because I'm telling you to. Because you need me to run the ship, and I need him.
Charlie turns his eyes on Spock. Spock winces, feels his thighs, and slowly gets to his feet.
If you try to hurt me again, I'll make a lot of people go away.
And what about Yeoman Janice? She dead, gone, destroyed.
Charlie shakes his head.
I won't tell you.
Kirk watches him carefully. He steps out of Janice's quarters, turning back to Kirk and Spock at the doorway.
Growing up isn't so much. I'm not a man and I can do anything. You can't.
Later, Spock watches an engineer checking an atmospheric control system outside Charlie's room. Charlie comes up with Kirk.
I'll activate the force field myself. You can return to your section.
Yeah, mean look. My hands are freezing. Like happy looks.
He steps into the room. Kirk doesn't follow. Charlie turns back to him.
Aren't you coming in?
Kirk shakes his head. Charlie steps towards the door. A force field throws him onto his back. He glares. As his eyes roll back in his head, the whole section of the wall, complete with the control panel and doorway, vanishes. Charlie steps out into the corridor and looks at Kirk and Spock, who become frozen to the spot. He goes up to them.
That wasn't nice. You'll be sorry. You wait, you'll see. You'll be sorry you did that. You will.
They unfreeze as he walks away. A young crewman steps out of her room. Charlie glares at her as she passes. Her hands become wrinkled and aged. She lifts them to her cheeks and finds that her face, too, is old and withered.
No! No laughing!
A woman stumbles out onto the corridor. Her face has no eyes, nose, or mouth. Later, on the bridge, Charlie sits at the helmsman's station, adjusting the controls as Kirk and Spock look on.
Captain Kirk, my instruments show we're receiving a message on subspace frequency 3, ship to ship. I can't hear it, sir.
You're creating that message, Charlie, or you're blocking one that's coming in?
It's my game, Captain. You have to find out. Like you said, that's how the game's played. You can have it now. I've locked on course for Colony 5 again.
He goes over to Spock and Uhura, then leaves the bridge. Uhura, Spock, and McCoy watch him go. Kirk fumes silently. The turbolift descends, carrying Charlie to the lower decks. Hurrying out of the lift and along the corridor, he almost bumps into a young yeoman. He freezes her with a look and carries on, barging past three other crewmen. On the bridge, Kirk thumps the rail with his fist.
I waited long enough. I'm going to take him on. You don't have any special immunity? Not anymore. Push far enough, he'd send you off to oblivion, too. Mr. Spock?
Out of the question.
Wait a minute. Is Charlie... Oh, yeah. Spock, has he done away with anybody since he took over?
Not so far as we know.
And maybe he can't. Could be he's overreached himself. It's a big ship. He's taken full control. If we could tax his power, turn on every device on the ship, every circuit, every light, all of it, and while he's fighting that, if I could distract him, maybe you could tranquilize him, keep him under until we reach Colony 5.
Risky, General.
If we don't try, Doctor, he'll get rid of us anyway. There's no choice, gentlemen, none at all.
I can make you all go away. Anytime I want to.
He sits in the captain's seat.
Get out of my chair, Charlie, and get out of it now.
I've got your ship, Captain.
They lock eyes. Kirk nods at Spock and McCoy.
Maybe, Charlie, but I don't think you can handle any more.
He nods at Spock and McCoy again, who've gone over to the navigational substation. They switch on everything within reach.
I think you've reached your limit and can't take on one more thing.
Spock and McCoy move to the science computer systems.
You're gonna have to.
Spock and McCoy move to Lieutenant Uhura's communications console. Charlie looks around bewildered, then turns back to Kirk.
I could have sent you away before, but I didn't.
You're gonna have to take me out.
Don't make me do it now.
You've got my ship and I want it back. I want my crew back, whole.
If I have to break your neck to do it.
He throws Charlie out of his chair.
Don't push me.
Charlie glares at Kirk, who doubles up and collapses to the carpeted floor of the bridge.
I'm sorry. What?
Uhura turns to her station. Charlie leaps up.
Stop.
Kirk grabs him.
I just stop it!
Captain, navigation console is clear now. Ship is answering the helm.
Sir, something off our starboard bow. The message says they're from Faces.
Janice materializes on the bridge in her pink robe. She goes over to Kirk.
Captain, how did
it's
I...
It's all right, come. Sensors show there's something there, Captain. Deflectors indicate no solid substance.
A hazy green sphere appears on the screen.
No!
No,
please. Don't let them take me. I can't live with them anymore.
Charlie reaches out imploring hands to Kirk and the crew. A translucent green head materializes on the bridge.
My friends. You said you were my friends, remember? When I came aboard!
Charlie turns and looks fearfully at the head, which belongs to a dignified, elderly humanoid.
Please.
He goes over to Kirk.
Home.
And clutches his arm fearfully.
Take me home.
The shimmering green head opens its mouth to speak. Charlie cowers.
I have taken my form centuries ago so that I may communicate with you. We did not realize until too late that the boy had gone, and we are saddened that his escape cost the lives of the first ship. We could not help them. But we have returned your people and your ship to you. Everything is as it was.
Kirk looks at Charlie, who turns to him piteously.
Oh, I won't do it again. Please, I'll be good. I won't ever do it again.
Kirk regards him impassively. Charlie looks at the floating head of the Thasian.
I'm sorry about the Antares. I'm sorry! When I came aboard!
He turns his beseeching eyes to the captain.
Please. I want to go with you. Help me!
Kirk, who's been watching Charlie with a stern and unyielding expression, turns to the shimmering, translucent figure and for the first time shows sympathy for the boy's plight. Uhura, Spock, and McCoy watch as he gets to his feet.
The boy belongs with his own kind.
That will be impossible.
With training, we can teach him to live in our society. If he can be taught not to use his power.
We gave him the power so he could live. He will use it. Always. And he would destroy you and your kind. Or you would be forced to destroy him to save yourselves.
Is there nothing you can do?
We offer him life. And we will take care of him.
Sadly, Kirk lowers his eyes.
Come, Charles.
The hazy green head slowly fades from sight.
Oh, please. Don't let them take me.
Charlie backs away.
I can't even touch them. Janice. They can't feel. Not like you. They don't love.
He stares around wildly.
I wanna stay.
Charlie fades from sight and vanishes. McCoy and Janice look on, shocked and moved. Kirk turns to the viewscreen where the hazy green sphere of the Thasian ship also slowly disappears.
Charlie's back on board the Thasian ship, sir. They signal they're leaving.
Kirk sinks back down into his seat. Janice sobs, puts a hand over her eyes, and lurches over to the captain's chair.
It's all right, human. It's all over now.
Ahead of them, the main viewscreen is scattered with distant stars. Spock stands at Kirk's right hand, a somber expression on his Vulcan features. Yeoman Rand turns to Dr. McCoy, who leads her slowly from the bridge. This audio description was written and produced by IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.